Chances are, if you know anything about Hanukkah, you have a fairly basic understanding of this as a revolt where some Greeks, or were they somehow Syrians or somehow hyphenated Syrian Greeks, invaded the land of Israel and somehow oppressed it. And then the Maccabees rose up against them, drove them out, and then rededicated the temple, which had been defiled. And there was this miracle with some oil, and it lasted for 8 days. And so, like all Jewish holidays, they tried to kill us. We survived. Let's eat. But, you know, when you actually get into the history of it, there's so much other fascinating material. I'd like to take you through 8 very quick glimpses into the Maccabean revolt that might be a little different from what you heard when you were a child. First of all, we should understand that the Maccabean Revolt was, at its root, essentially a civil war. It described a fissure between two large groups of Jews and how they felt they should relate to the world around them. This is a result of the political situation in which Israel had been under Greek dominance, that is, Hellenistic dominance, Greek cultural dominance, since Alexander conquered the region and then died suddenly in the year 322 before the Common Era. The Greeks were guests of the Jews long before they became an occupying power, but let's just try and understand the political circumstances first. So here, if you have a look at this map, you'll see that after Alexander died, his empire was divided amongst his successors. The two empires that are especially important for us are the Seleucid Empire, which is in the yellow and occupies much of Central Asia, and the Ptolemaic Empire, which is based in Egypt. Now, the reason why the Seleucid Empire is often called the Syrian Empire, it's because much of their activity was based in what would today be called Syria. But they were fundamentally Greek in orientation. The original leaders in particular were all of Greek descent, and they were all participating in larger Hellenistic culture. But when you look more closely at where Israel is located right here, you'll see that on this map they have cleverly labeled it both yellow and purple, because it was at the borderland between the Ptolemaic Empire based in Egypt and the Seleucid Empire based in Syria. And as a result, Israel was handed back and forth for much of the time, and only after the year 200 was it fairly firmly in the hands of the Syrian Greeks, and that's when most of the adventure of the Maccabean Revolt occurs. The version of the story that you probably heard as a child had a very important role of this man, Antiochus IV Epiphanes, who was the leader of the Seleucid Empire between 175 and 164. He was definitely a very colorful figure. He definitely had a different approach to, shall we say, religious toleration than his predecessors had, and he was responsible for some terrible persecution of Jews in the middle of the second century. He was also a bit of a madman. In fact, he had the nickname Epiphanes, means God made manifest, which is kind of like a typical name that you might want to take if you were an emperor of a large region like this. But he was known behind his back as Epimanes, which in Latin would be translated as Meshuggener. He used to do things like, dress up as a commoner and then go to the bathhouses and, just try and slum it out with the regular people. And then he used to enjoy revealing himself as being, in fact, the emperor himself. And then he would ask, to have oil poured on him by everyone present. And he seems to have had a very troubled childhood. At any rate, what is he specifically doing messing with Jewish religious practice? There was a brewing controversy within Israel itself. The thing is, Antiochus inherited an internal dispute among Jews, among those who were in favor of increasing their commitment to Hellenistic values. And on the other hand, there were those who were more traditionalists who said, no, this is too much. You can't take us in this direction. Now, Antiochus, who was stinging from some military losses and had a significant tax burden that he had to raise from his population, began to become involved in this internal dispute, because the highest office that Jews could hope to reach in Israel was the office of the high priest, the Kohen Gadol. And there were two major factions who were vying for it, the Hellenists, which were favored by a man named Jason and another even more extreme figure named Menelaus on the one hand, and the traditionalists who favored someone named Chonya, also known as Onias. The Hellenists, first with Jason and then even more so under Menelaus, offered Antiochus more tax revenues, specifically suggesting that they would raid the temple treasury itself. And so Antiochus, who otherwise would never have gotten involved in such a suit, backed the Hellenizing party, first Jason and then later Menelaus, because Menelaus offered more money. And after one humiliating military and political defeat, Antiochus chose to press his advantage with the Hellenizing elements by ransacking the temple himself, dedicating it to Zeus rather than to the god of the Jews, and banning many traditional aspects of traditional Jewish practice, such as circumcision and the observance of the Sabbath. This sparked a revolt, but the roots of the revolt were really between the Jews themselves, between those Jews who wanted more accommodation to Hellenistic values on the one hand, and those who disagreed and said that the Greek world had to be held at arm's length.